Broadcasted live. Catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.
On the line this evening is the CEO of the Nelson Mandela Children's Fund, Dr. Linda Ncube Nkomo, and they, together with Deloitte Africa, put together a study to assess the economic impact of child poverty in South Africa. Dr. Linda, thanks so much for your time this evening. Thank you so much for making time and taking us through the study. Good evening.
Thank you for making time for us to have this very important conversation around what's happening with children in South Africa.
Let's talk about what the study was actually there to quantify. What did it set out to quantify exactly?
So the study is a follow-up study from a report that we did jointly with Deloitte last year that was looking at the state of children in South Africa, whose findings showed that children, the majority of children in South Africa, were multidimensionally poor, meaning that they had more than one level of the dimension poverty that is used to define the extent to which a person is poor. So following that study, we then said, government, we know, is spending money in trying to alleviate poverty in the country. Let's try and quantify the numbers. What is it costing the state? What is it costing? How much is civil society putting in? And how much is the private sector putting in, so that we can understand what the numbers we're talking about look like, what the indirect costs are looking like, and the importance of us having to look at a different way of investing in children so that we can start getting the outcomes that we need and are currently not getting with the current methodology.
With the numbers provided to you, you were able to assess and come up with a $700 billion a year type of number, investment from government and the private sector. How easy was it to come up with a number for the indirect costs?
So, you know, Deloitte did a lot of the methodology using the expertise that they have in-house, including the actuarial science expertise, but what so they would have had they would have run a model, and all of the numbers that we're talking about, you know, the emphasis that's coming out is that these are estimates, but the number of the indirect costs of and the indirect cost is the potential earnings that could have contributed to the South African economy. These numbers were calculated using the National Income Dynamics Study database that then is a longitudinal study that tracks the same families over a period of time to see the trajectory of children then living in poverty versus that of children not living in poverty.
These numbers actually, let's talk about the direct costs. They're not shabby at all. And I think the concern then there is, even though we don't have the numbers now and the answers now, over a 30-year period, we've had great policies actually, and the intention is there to alleviate poverty and to support children. But these numbers are not translating to the direct impact that we need to see in alleviating the poverty in children.
Absolutely. So these numbers are showing us that the investment is being done. And I think the question that they force us to ask ourselves is, are we doing it the right way? Because, I mean, if you're looking at what the calculations work out to at a per child level, it's like 51,000 rand per year being invested in children who need that investment. But we're not seeing the results. So we cannot continue down this road and thinking that doing exactly what we've been doing is going to give us a different result. It then needs us to come together, put our heads together, call in people who have expertise in policy analysis and so on, and try and find the solution to what do we need to do differently so that we can start then getting the benefit or the return, and I'm using words that really should not be used in the context of children, but the social return, I guess, which is the improvement of lives that we should be getting at this level of investment.
And exactly that. I mean, we are speaking of the lives of children as if, you know, these are things and we can quantify them in that way. There are bigger problems here, though, apart from the numbers. It's the other insecurities. It's the other costs, how children are not safe, how children are not secure, how children are not, you know, happy in our homes. And those are things that are very difficult for policies to change. More our responsibility as communities, as families, as people that live with children and bring up children.
And those are things that we cannot say it's the responsibility of government, because those are behavioral issues and they speak to what happens in homes in a space that very few people have got access to. And it's still, you know, a situation that we continue to be talking about, that the safety of children is in the hands of caregivers, it's in the hands of neighbors and so on. And so we need to be now looking at what is it that, again, we need to be doing differently in order to get to a point where the numbers of us having four times the average of the global numbers of child murders can go down. I mean, we can't go on like this, where children are dying in the hands of adults simply because nobody took up the responsibility of ensuring their safety.
You know, the irony, you invited the MMC, the MEC, I beg your pardon, of Agriculture in Gauteng to give a keynote address. And the irony for me here is that actually we grow a lot of food. We have more than enough food, but people still go hungry and we throw away a lot of food too. You know, something right there has to give, and we need to think about what is wrong with how the cycle doesn't alleviate poverty, even though there is so much that's left over, so much that goes to the dustbin.
And this is really where the private sector, the big retailers, need to come to the party in a huge way. There's the quantities of food that are produced in South Africa are such that all of us can have three nutritious meals a day. And so, again, we need to start looking at the issue of food differently. We need to start looking at no food should be thrown away. Food that we need should go into a food bank where people can easily access that food. And then we also want to count on the integrity of people to take what they need and not take food that's sitting in food banks for resale. We need to look at every household being able to grow, as far as there is space available, food for their own consumption. You know, we talked about schools having food gardens, churches converting the vast tracts of land that they have into food gardens, so that we can really start attacking the issue of hunger in a very practical way. So that's within, you know, households, community, school, church level to be able to do, while government then grapples with what needs to be done differently from a policy level. But it's definitely a situation that needs all hands on deck, and especially retailers who have a lot of food that they may not sell because, you know, the apples are bruised, but there's actually nothing wrong with the apples. So looking at the system that says, let's create food banks in the spaces where we operate as retailers to feed the community.
In as much as the study was looking at, you know, the cost of child poverty, do we have a sense why that money does not translate, you know, just, you know, from the work that you've been doing as the Mandela Children's Fund?
So we start investing in children rather late in life. So, I mean, there's a multiple factors. But one of the key factors that we know and should really be considered from a policy perspective is the extent to which a pregnant mother is being assisted from a nutrition perspective to be able to have a fighting chance of giving birth to a baby that is of a normal birth weight. And then the support continuing to a point where the baby, you know, in that first critical 5 years of their lives, are getting the correct type of nutrition. The mothers are getting the correct type of support, so that the developmental goals of the babies that are required for them to get into the early childhood centers are met. So a lot of the time we're missing that critical, you know, first 5 years, and we kind of start wanting to talk about early childhood development more when the children are going into facilities, and then we're having the conversations around facilities, practitioners, curriculum, but we've not invested in this little baby from the time that they were conceived until the time that they're going into the centers. So that's one of the things that we really need to be looking into, the extent to which we are supporting our mothers, you know, prenatally, during pregnancy, and also the postnatal support, so that, you know, they are in a space where, or in a state, to be able to give the best to the children at any given point in time.
We've been watching in horror how children are dying from consuming food. I'm not even going to call it food, but some sort of snacks that are not dense in nutrition, that are just, you know, snacks that just fill you up. And you hear many, many parents say, well, you know, sometimes our concern is not nutrition. It's to just get us full. And I think that's a big concern, because what we've been watching, I think, unveils and reveals a much bigger problem than just unsafe food, but food that is also not nutritious. We are not providing food that builds and sustains our children in a safe way, in an environment that allows them to grow healthily. We are a long way from doing that. What will it take?
So I think it's going to take a lot of intentional and sustained education and awareness around what nutritious food looks like, around what healthy food looks like. It's also going to need need a certain level of willingness of the private sector, the retailers, to come to the party and to do their part in foregoing profit on the basic but nutritious food that would make the difference in the growth and the development of a child. And in that way, stretch the food grant a little bit more to be able to buy food that is not just filling. Because right now, kids are being fed calories, but the nutrition value is hardly there. So there is the piece of supporting and educating and creating awareness on the nutritious food and what it looks like, and also the very practical reality of making that nutritious food affordable, so that families that are in this group that, you know, gets the child grant is getting a grant that enables them to buy the right food, and not just, you know, as long as there's mealy-meal in the house and the children have eaten, I know they'll go to sleep on a full stomach. So not just about full stomach, but stomachs full of nutritious food is really what we want to see.
This report alarmed me. Do you get the sense that people are outraged from what we are seeing? You know, is there a sense that this is something we need to stop and pause for a minute and take in and really urgently do something about? Or are people, and I mean, I'm not pointing any fingers here, but are people sort of saying, oh, okay, yeah, thanks, it's great, keep doing what you're doing type of thing? What's the reaction you're getting?
Well, the report is still a couple of days old, and I think what would be great is for us to put a challenge in to your listeners to say, go to the Nelson Mandela Children's website, download the report, read it, and a week from today, dial into the show and tell us what your feeling about the report is. I mean, within the sector, we in developing this report, we're really trying to give the shock effect that is saying there is the expenditure that is being incurred and we're not getting the results. But there's also the very real potential growth to the economy that's lost because we're not investing correctly into this amazing human called a child, such that they can become part of the human capital resource that we need within the country and globally.
And you know, within the sector, the NGO sector, are you going to look at things differently in how you can best spend the very little resources that you have in assisting, you know, with this child poverty issue?
I mean, within the NGO sector, the intention is to then be part of the solution in looking at, you know, in being able to say, you know, this is what possibly what policy should be looking like. So really lobbying from a policy perspective for a different way of investing where children are concerned, And it might lead us to do drastic things like take on, you know, really paternalistic attitudes to say, maybe we shouldn't be giving money. Maybe we should actually be giving retail vouchers that limit what you can buy so that we can actually get the right food to the children. Because something's got to give. We can't continue this way and think we'll get a different result. Then really, really, we would be insane in our approach to the issue.
And in a way, you know, the kind of voucher that is not exchangeable. You cannot exchange it for money back or, you know, alcohol or whatever.
Yeah.
It has got to go to what it's meant to do and feed those children. And maybe not even chocolate. It's got to be vegetables. I don't know.
Absolutely. It's got to be vegetables. It's going to be peanut butter, fortified mealy-meal, fish, the things that we know children need if they are going to get the correct levels of protein to, you know, for them to get those development milestones met. Because it's the protein deficiency that's really, really the crisis that we're trying to solve for in terms of nutrition in children.
When I was asking you about the response that you're getting from people, I mean, the elephant in the room is that we are living in the most unequal society in the world. And there is a sense that, you know, you just look the other way. You pull up your window, you pretend like you don't see. And this society has been doing that for far too long. And I just wonder, you know, what really will it take for us to care about the people that are not sometimes necessarily in your home, but are in our society and we should worry about? I mean, I don't know what your thoughts are there.
I think our rolling up windows is really a sign of, is a coping mechanism, a sign of defenselessness and hopelessness and a way of saying, I actually don't know where to start with solving for this issue. And I think it's really going to be a case of what can I do within my sphere of influence, the children that are around me or the children in communities that I've got access to. What can I do to make that difference? Am I going to provide the seed for the food gardens to be created? Am I going to put up a food garden in my home so that the surplus, instead of trying to find another income stream that really I could go without, I'm taking the surplus to the nearest place where I know there's the urgent need for food. So it's going to lead us to think differently and not, you know, lie on the curl into a ball and hope this thing is going to go away, because it's not going to go away without intentional focus on finding a sustainable solution. And also look at what other countries have done.
Yeah.
Countries that also had inequality, economic equality within their spaces. And I think the common denominator we're going to find is that they had a long-term plan, they worked backwards from the long-term plan, and then there was the focus, that political will to make that sustained difference that was required to transform the situation.
And perhaps maybe when we start looking holistically at the issue, you know, how do we make sure that those mothers and fathers who have children to look after are not spending all their money on transport getting to work? You know, little things in your own little corner. How are we going to make sure that these children are being well fed? How are we going to make sure that the welfare of our children is secure?
Absolutely. But also, it goes back to sort of the big cog in what we're trying to solve for at this point in time, which is food, is going to be retailers, plus the agricultural sector coming together and saying, you know what, and maybe policy as well that says, we don't throw away edible food.
Yes.
We do something different with it. And that something different is actually put it in the hands of those who desperately need it. Because it is a form of violence to sit and watch children starve, and yet the food that could feed them is being thrown away.
And you hear it all the time. Some of the restaurants want to, but they're afraid. They're afraid because of legislation. They're afraid because, you know, they're not allowed to feed families or children food that's been out for I don't know how long and so on. So, you know, just in case they don't get themselves into trouble. So, yeah, policy may go a long way as well in that regard.
Yeah, and I think it's also about, you know, because you want to have the balance of being able to provide, but also not providing what will poison people's systems and eat their debt. So being clear around if food is cooked in this way, then you can't, you know, give it over. But if it is prepared in this way and it's only been sitting for this amount of time and it's cooked food, then you can't give it. There is a way around it. We just need to sit down and apply our minds to it.
I really appreciate your time. CEO of the Nelson Mandela Children's Fund, Dr. Linda Ngobe-Nkomo, who's just been giving us a chilling account of a study that they did looking at the cost of poverty of children in this country. And it is quite worrying. I will direct you to where the link is, where you can have a look for the report yourself. And yeah, it's an ongoing conversation that I think we definitely need to have. Thank you so much, Dr. Linda, and really appreciate your time.
If you missed it live, catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.